From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. Coming up this week, the governor and lieutenant governor sent a letter to the federal government asking for a fisheries disaster declaration for the 2018 Pacific cod fishery in the Gulf of Alaska. Also in Kodiak area state waters, big boats are capped off at 50% of the pot cod allocation, leaving the smaller boats to collect the remaining guideline harvest level. Then in Sitka, a group of fishermen is looking at mapping the rise and fall of the ocean floor in order to scope out their target species. That and more coming up on this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott signed a letter last week asking the federal government to declare the 2018 Pacific cod fishery in the Gulf of Alaska a disaster. If the fishery is declared a federal disaster, it's eligible for relief funds, although where those would go is unclear at this point in the process. Last year, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council decided to decrease the 2018 Pacific cod quota in the Gulf by 80% in response to a decline in stock. Fishing communities geared up for long-term consequences. The Kodiak Island Borough and City of Kodiak were among those to send a letter of support for a disaster declaration to the governor's office. City Councilman John Whitten, who co-chairs the borough and city's fisheries workgroup, says it's too soon to tell what the decline means for the community. He says they may know more after the cod season wraps up and tax numbers come in.
So once we start to collate that, and if this is indeed a multi-year impact, then we'll start to be able to put together, I think, better information to forward on to the governor and be asking how we'll have more specific requests versus a general disaster declaration. So this is just the first stage, and I think, in what's going to be a multi-year process.
This will be the second fishery disaster the Gulf has gone through in recent years. The first was for the 2016 Gulf of Alaska pink salmon season, which the state requested after the season ended. The federal government declared that fishery a disaster at the beginning of last year. And in February, the state learned the pink salmon season would be one of nine fisheries to share $200 million in relief funds. That's much less than the $150 million senators requested for Alaska alone. Barbara Blake, senior advisor to Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott, says the Pacific Cod Declaration is different in that the state is requesting it before the season is over, but the process for securing funds is similar. Blake says the letter will go to the Secretary of Commerce, and if the declaration goes through, the federal government will work with the state to make an appropriation request.
How we've seen this come about in the past is that that request goes in along with other natural disasters, and that's usually how we end up getting the appropriations for that, is that they roll it into natural disasters like hurricane relief and things of that nature.
That's how the 2016 Gulf of Alaska pink salmon fisheries won funding. It's unclear if the timeline for this declaration will be comparable.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Earlier this month, the state waters Pacific cod pot gear season closed for big boats in the Kodiak area. Alaska Department of Fish and Game area management biologist Nat Nichols says there is a provision that if the larger vessels catch 50% of the guideline harvest level for the pot cod fishery, they're cut off.
We've never used it, so we've had this management plan since 1997, but there's always been enough small boats that they keep ahead of the big boats and the whole fishery closes together. We reach the full GHL before the big boats catch half the GHL.
This year, he says, there were only about 10 participants, down from the usual 30 or so, and six of those vessels were greater than 58 feet.
The fact that we had more of them made it almost assured right out of the gate that we were going to use this big boat cap for the first time, and we did.
The allocation is roughly 1.1 million pounds. Nichols says that's a drop from the 6 million pound GHL of previous years. The state pot cod fishery opened February 21st. Nichols says the remaining two or three active boats should soon be done fishing the rest of the GHL. Trident Seafoods will pay $300,000 in a settlement with the federal government for Clean Water Act violations at its plants in Sandpoint and Wrangell. In both locations, the fines are the result of Trident discharging more fish waste than legally allowed. Bill Dunbar is a spokesperson for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. In Sandpoint, he says Trident will remove about 3.5 acres of waste from the seafloor near their plant.
These are enormous numbers of fish that are being processed in one place. So all of that fish waste gets deposited in enormous volume in essentially still water. The currents don't take that fish waste away. That waste tends to pile up on the seafloor.
Dunbar says those piles have created a gelatinous goo that carpets the seafloor, killing anything underneath it. And it's been around for a while. Trident attorney Joe Plesha says the pile is left over from cod processing from 1987 to 1994. He says he told the EPA about the fish waste around the time of a 2011 settlement.
I actually left it up to them. I said, if you want us to remediate this pile, we of course will. But for reasons I'm not really certain of, they never brought it up again, and I candidly didn't remind them. So it wasn't part of that 2011 consent decree.
Trident paid a $2.5 million fine to settle the 2011 case and committed to spending $40 million to prevent future Clean Water Act violations. Dunbar agrees these violations are very similar and could have been lumped in with the 2011 settlement.
For reasons I can't explain to you, they weren't.
Plesha says he's confident this type of violation won't happen again because Trident has built a meal plant in Sandpoint. All the waste is screened, so large pieces can't be released. The company has also agreed to limit the amount of fish waste discharged in Wrangell. Meanwhile, Trident's Accutan plant had a fire late last month that consumed 25 acres of tundra. The company didn't report the fire to the community, but Plesha stresses that was a mistake.
The plant manager was busy making sure that the people were notified to get out of the bunk houses and so forth and so on. So he should have, but he didn't contact the VSPO in Accutan.
Plesha says the plant manager has since apologized. Trident is still investigating the incident, but Plesha says they believe a spark from a burn pile caused the fire. The plant was not damaged and no one was injured. They say a rising tide lifts all boats, but what about a rising data set? The Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association is nearing completion of a bathymetric map to help local fishermen catch more efficiently. The map was made possible through a network of small boat fishermen that have spent the past decade gathering data on the bottom of the seafloor. KCEW's Emily Kwong has more.
This is a great image of how good our data is getting.
Stephen Rhodes is exploring open ocean with the click of a mouse. He's showing a group of fellow fishermen the latest version of a map detailing the rise and fall of the ocean floor. Sitka Sound is presented in vivid detail.
To the west of that is state data, and to the east of that is our user data. And we're getting pretty close on the shape of the bottom.
Otherwise known as bathymetry. Fishermen have long used soundings to visualize in their mind what the seafloor looks like and target species known to gather near certain topographical features. With these maps, Rhodes is able to home in on those locations more precisely. He toggles with a slider, which paints the map with colors to represent different depths.
Most of the time when I'm fishing, I use the discrete mode because my brain gets stuck in fish in the green, that's where they're at.
The fishermen in the room look on. They aren't just the future users of this product. They were its data scientists, too, pinging the seafloor with echo sounders for years while out fishing. At the end of every season, the Fisheries Conservation Network sent their data to the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association. And like pieces of a puzzle, Alpha reconciled the local data set with federal and state maps, working in concert with a software company called NobleTech Time Zero. Alpha's executive director, Linda Bankin, said the result is one of the most complex bathymetric databases on the eastern side of the Gulf of Alaska.
It's 140 million data points that have been contributed. It's been a lot of years getting to this point, and we're really excited about the level of detail that we have now and the quality of the maps.
And now, Alpha is ready to share these maps with the fishermen who made them. The XYZ file can run on a computer of about $1,000 in value that supports the NobleTech software. Fishermen are invited to contribute to and clean up the data set while out on the water. And the goal of all of this is to make Sitka's small boat fleet more competitive and efficient. Behnken says the project was born out of a desire to help fishermen target the fish they want and avoid the fish they don't.
So, for example, halibut tend to be in hard bottom areas rather than sandy or muddy bottom. But if you get into hard bottom areas that have too many pinnacles, for example, then you get too many rockfish.
In addition to reducing bycatch, Behnken hopes the maps will help fishermen avoid areas that host sensitive species like corals and sponge and protect their gear. All participating fishermen will sign user agreements pledging not to share this data outside of the network. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported, in part, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
For the first time since the 1970s, the Yukon River near Galena and Ruby will be open for driftnet salmon fishing this summer. The Alaska Board of Fisheries voted unanimously at its meeting in Anchorage to support a proposal put forth by the tribal councils of Galena, Koyukuk, and Nulato to make drift gill nets legal in the area again. The board had rejected similar proposals on five prior occasions. Board member Israel Payton justified his yes vote by noting that current regulations, which required Galena DriftNet users to travel 30 miles to an adjacent fishing district, did not provide reasonable subsistence opportunities.
We heard in the committee work how users will be working all day and then have to get in their boat and go down and try to fish all night and then come back and work the next day. And I don't believe that provides reasonable opportunity as where this would, to allow the residents of Galena to fish right in front of their domicile.
In addition to economic hardships caused by traveling to the fishing grounds, the loss of set net sites after the 2013 Galena flood was also cited as a reason to reopen the area to drift net fishing. Opponents argued that the increased use of drift nets on the Middle Yukon would likely result in a greater harvest of Canadian origin king salmon, which are protected by an international treaty and critical for the continued recovery of the depleted king salmon stock. Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission President Stephanie Quinn Davidson agreed that more Canadian-bound kings could be caught, but based on Galena's average king harvest, the increase might be as low as 250 fish.
That is not going to make or break the escapement objective at the border, and I don't think that it's fair to necessarily punish this region for 250 king salmon.
Fishing game managers can still ban the use of drift nets in a given year if the salmon run is weak. The new regulations will also apply to the fall chum and coho salmon runs in August and September. The Board of Fisheries also removed a ban on subsistence fishing during the first pulse of king salmon up the Yukon, and a ban on the sale of king salmon taken as bycatch in the chum salmon commercial fishery. Fish and Game Now can allow both activities if certain conditions are met.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KIYU's Tim Bodoni in Galena, KCAW's Emily Kwong in Sitka, and KUCB's Zoe Sobel in Unalaska. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.